Hello and welcome to the NWR Newscast, episode 64 for Saturday, August the 6th. Well, that's all working
out. Can almost say this is an Ultra 64 episode.
Oh, yes. I assume it'll go up at 4 p.m. On Saturday the 6th. With me today, first, I'm your host, Zachary Miller. With me today, Scott Thompson.
Hello. You can call me Scott Thompson, 63 and a third, if you don't mind.
And, of course, Obi, Mike Sklenz.
Yeah, Mike Silicon Graphics Sklenz or something. Ultra Team.
There you go. Maybe I'm Zach Dolphin Miller. No. Dolphin was the GameCube. I'm an idiot.
What was the code name for the N64?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember that, too. Was it Project Reality?
Yeah, that's it.
That sounds right.
And so far from that, it turned out to be. But if you can't guess, we're going to talk about the Nintendo 64 since it's the 64th episode. Get it? But first, me and Mike haven't had a chance to weigh in on the whole 3DS price drop bombshell and the ambassador program. We weren't here for that newscast special. So, Mike, take it away.
I guess I wrote my big blog post about it. I'm sure some of the listeners read that. And basically, I guess my thoughts were just, everyone should have known it was coming, but I was more impressed with the way Nintendo handled it. A lot of people might think, oh, well, there's no good way to handle this kind of situation, but I think they did about the best job you possibly could by offering up value incentive and just their esteemed gratitude to the original purchasers of the 3DS.
In Japan and Europe.
Huh?
In Japan and Europe, they were grateful. In North America, they were like, fuck yeah, we're awesome.
Well, yeah, I guess to some degree, yeah.
Which I thought was funny.
But it was still the same strategy globally, so.
Oh, yeah.
I think the executives taking pay cuts, I guess obviously that is related to 3DS, more related to their overall general stock market outlook, including slumping Wii sales and everything on top of that. But, I think the 20 games is a pretty good mea culpa as far as I'm concerned. Even if I don't play half of them, that's still probably about $80 worth of content. It's not $80 worth of games or anything like that, but it's $80 worth of content because that's what they price it at. I don't value it as high as they price it, but the point is that even at their pricing, it's probably about double the price cut. So even at half valuation, it's still break even.
It's hard to justify any kind of cost for Balloon Fight.
If it had been 10 games and all NES games especially, I probably would be noticeably more upset.
Yeah.
And honestly, I probably would have preferred if these GBA games are exclusive and no one's going to get them, great, give those to everybody. But if the NES games are going to be made available to everybody, I would prefer $50 in eShop credit over $50 in eShop games.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's picking nits, I guess. Overall, I think it was a pretty good strategy. Of course, the internet fucking hates it because that's what the internet does.
The internet overreacts.
Yeah, what were your thoughts?
I think it's good. I told Andy before their show that if they had just announced a price cut and then had held off on the announcement of that ambassador program, I would have been really pissed off.
And that's what Apple did.
Oh, yeah?
A couple of years ago when the iPhone came out, this is what my blog post was mostly about, is that in 2007 when the iPhone came out, it was priced at $500 and $600, and it came out in like July or August, maybe very early August or something. I think early July. And then like at the end of September, they cut $200 off the price of it, which is a third of the high-end phone is $600, which is what most people got. Because who's going to spend $500 when you could spend $6 if you're spending that much money already?
Yeah.
So they cut the price by a third from $600 to $400. And like the backlash was like, listen, fucking Steve, we knew we knew this was going to happen eventually, but I expected this phone to be worth at least $100 more than it is worth now, right, and a year from now. You did 2 years of price cuts in 6 months. What the fuck just happened? Or 4 months even with the iPhone. And then they were like, oh man, this is not good. We totally pissed a bunch of people off. Here is a $100 gift card to the Apple Store.
Yeah.
And that's what they gave all of us. And I was like, great. Now I can buy a really nice pair of headphones.
did they cut the price for the same reason Nintendo's cutting 3DS price?
I don't think so. I think it had more to do with some sort of AT&T renegotiation of the contract where at first – when you bought an iPhone, there was no subsidy at all. It was just $600 flat out. And so the phone company wasn't subsidizing it like they normally do with phones, which is why you can get like an Android phone for like $25 now or whatever.
Yeah.
But they didn't subsidy that. And instead of AT&T buying the phones and reselling them, what they did was they didn't. And instead they gave AT&T like a 10% cut of everybody's bill.
Oh.
Which was like, insanely good deal for Apple.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And eventually AT&T was like, this isn't working out. And they recut the deal.
I see.
And then it became a subsidy, but there was a price drop as a result. And I think that's how it worked.
Okay. Anyway, it was
a poor reaction. It was ultimately good reaction on Apple's part, but poor initial handling of the situation. Unlike Nintendo, who obviously learned from Apple's mistake, because it's the exact same situation. Like, was it March, April, May, June, July? 5 months later, it gets a 1/3 price cut.
Yeah.
It's the exact same situation. And they were wise enough to learn from Apple's mistake.
I am surprised by how much they're cutting it. I mean, it's as cheap as a DSi XL now.
Yeah.
And they're not cheap. It's as expensive as.
They're not even going to stop selling the DSi XL. It seems crazy to me.
That's weird to me. Yeah. They're keeping
And they're not going to change the price.
Yeah, they're keeping all the DS systems on the market.
Well, they're probably taking a bit of a loss on the 3DS now, so they want to recoup funds on the other systems. But
it's also interesting that, oh Lord, what was I going to say? Oh, their earnings projections went shot down like 80%.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think in a few years we'll be able to have a discussion about what went wrong with the 3DS.
Yeah.
The DSi XL, I think they're keeping that the same price because they don't want to lower it, you know, and then have this holiday season where people are rather, you know, would rather purchase that because it's cheaper. You know, they want 3DS to sell well.
It is going to be confusing, though, for a consumer, you know, Joe Schmo consumer like DSi, you know, DS Lite.
Yeah,
DS.
But anyone who knows can at least can differentiate between the DSi XL and the 3DS. If they see them at the same price, it makes the 3DS price look more attractive because you know it's a newer product. So the fact that it's priced as much as an older product makes the price look magically more attractive.
That's very
exactly.
true.
Because you do this weird comparison in your head where like, well, for the same price, I could get that piece of crap or I could get this thing that is brand new.
Right.
As opposed to if they lowered the DSi XL to $150, they'd be like, well, I could get the 3DS, but I could save $20 if I get the XL.
Yeah, exactly.
No one's going to opt for the XL if they're going to go in with $200 anymore.
You know, I kind of, if I could transfer my DSi games over to it, I might, well, now they're on the 3DS, but back when it came out, I would have gotten a DSi XL. Things like a Acer.
Oh, yeah. I had a DS Fat that I sold, and then I had a DS Lite, but that was the last DS I owned. A launch unit, navy blue, Japanese DS Lite.
Thing. Oh, not Japanese, but yeah,
the navy blue one only ever came out in Japan.
I think mine was black or gray or...
Yeah, probably.
Man, that was an ugly unit. My God.
Yeah. What, the Lite?
No, the original, the launch
Oh, no,
unit.
I'm talking about my Lite was navy blue.
Oh, I got you. Okay. I'm talking about the Fat.
Oh, yeah.
I had
that DS Lite until this year when I got a 3DS.
There you go.
If I had an XL, I probably wouldn't have bought, or even a DSi, I probably wouldn't have bought a 3DS. But I figured, well, I can get all those DSi features now, and I never experienced any of those. So that's why I got the 3DS at launch.
Oh, there you go. And then you weren't able to experience them for another few months.
Yeah.
Wait, so Zach, you used, do you use the original DS the entire time?
No, Maybe? I had a DS Lite.
No, oh, Zach.
Sorry.
No, I had a DS Fat, and then because I'm a consumer whore, I... then bought a DS Lite.
Oh, okay.
The question is, Zach, though, do you own a Game Boy Advance, an SP, and a Micro?
The only one I don't own is a Micro.
Well, yeah, but we all own the other two. The micro is the real cincher in that equation that makes you a consumer whore.
I have been looking. I'm always kind of on the lookout for older systems just to have them.
You want to get the, you got to get the Japanese micro that looks like a Famicom.
Oh yeah, I had the Game Boy Advance SP that that looked like a Famicom.
I have the lime green SP that came packaged with whichever Zelda came packaged with. It was the only way to get it.
Yeah,
no, it wasn't Minish Cap. It was,
no,
I forget which one it was. It was the first one on SP. It might have been Four Swords even.
Oh yeah, maybe.
But it's like it's in lime, like super lime green, and I love it to death. It's like one of my favorite systems ever.
Nice, but I am always on the lookout on like Craigslist for micros, and nobody ever sells them.
Oh, and then I have that Kelly Slater edition.
Oh Jesus!
I won it in a contest from like I was in college, and I think I got it from like Maxim or something. It was I was on like NeoGAF, and they're like, "Hey, look, here's this contest where you can win a Game Boy Advance that's been custom decorated, custom like hand painted and stuff glued onto it, like arts and craftsy, by like one of three extreme sports guys, and one of them was Kelly Slater, who was apparently a surfer. One of them was like a skateboarder guy, and one of them was like a BMX guy. I don't know whoever like Todd Mira or whatever the fuck.
Dave Mira and Tony
Dave Mira,
Hawk,
Triple
yeah.
X, Dave Mira fucking ride a bike and look at boobies, and Tony Hawk, professional skater.
Sounds like an awesome contest.
So, like, those guys are kind of famous, but then the third guy was Kelly Slater, who's a surfer. Like, no one really cares about surfing, at least not to the same level that they care about skateboarding and BMX. So I won his, and it's custom painted like the ocean, and it's got, like, glittery things glued to the sides of it. I did an article for it on Planet GameCube when I won it, because it was just like, what are the fucking chances of me winning this stupid Game Boy? I need to show this to the world, and because of the internet, I could.
There you go. Thank God for the internet.
Yeah, that's pretty. That's a good story.
I guess I don't know what else to say besides the name Ambassador Program sounds stupid.
Yeah.
They could have just called it, you get a bunch of free games if you bought it on launch or before August 11th or whatever the deadline is.
But Zach, we're ambassadors now. We have to go forth and show everyone how awesome the 3DS is.
Oh, is that what it is? That's why we're ambassadors. Yep. Okay.
I got a name badge.
Signed into a blood pact.
I didn't know what I was getting into when I bought it on launch day.
If you don't convince at least one person to buy one every month, those 20 free games get deleted.
They disappear. It's like a PlayStation Plus account. All of a sudden, they're gone.
We have a
shit,
job
man, I better work it up. Scott, why don't you read our one piece of listener mail? It's about a similar topic.
Okay, yeah, I can do that. So this is from Kasaki Project. I think I've got that right.
Yep.
And he wrote, so I'm kind of shocked at how drastic the price cut is. Also, how soon. But when you look at the sales, it makes sense. The system is definitely struggling. Honestly, 3DS seems like it's Nintendo's next GameCube, but we'll see. It may seem too desperate and discourage confidence to consumers. Maybe $200 would have spurred sales and seemed less insane. Also, to your point about the U.S. press release seeming arrogant, are you surprised? Between Operation Rainfall and their E3 PR, this is their MO. In regards to me personally, I bought the system day one with three games. Man, I really regret it now. I'd much rather have got the system for $170 and Zelda in August. The five-month wait wouldn't have killed me. I'm glad I'm getting 20 free games, but it's mostly stuff I own or have played. It's a nice gesture, but for me personally, I would have rather have saved the $80 and not bought the four games I got before Zelda. They're all okay, but we're just placeholders. I've had some fun as an early adopter, but I'd rather have saved the $230. Thanks. Yeah, I could see that.
He's right.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, there's really.
Why did he buy three games at launch? There weren't three good games at launch.
Yeah, do you guys want to guess what he bought?
Oh, I'll bet it's Street Fighter 4, Pilot Wings, and how about Ridge Racer?
Yeah, the third one's a toss-up. It might be Ghost Recon. That got a good amount of decent hype.
Or maybe he just got
Pilot Wings, Steel Diver, and Nintendogs. Maybe he got all three editions of Nintendogs.
It's very dedicated. Yeah, well, yeah. Thanks for writing in. I just have to say that, Mike, when you edit this podcast, I think you should use that old picture of you as the chapter.
Oh, I'm going to.
Okay, good.
Nice.
That needs to happen. Yeah, this thing is incredible. People need to see this. I just imagine they got all three guys to just sit at a table somewhere and like draw all over these themselves.
I wouldn't be surprised if they had their kids do it.
Yeah, exactly. Arts and crafts with some Game Boys.
Yeah, I mean, I was just looking at it again, and God forgive how awful I look in this photo. But if you look at it, you can see it's got, like, on the left-hand side, it's like a wave that's curving over the top of the Game Boy screen, and there's a sun in the top right corner. But all in the wave, Zach was looking at it, and he was saying that it looks like it must have been difficult to play. And he goes, no, it was impossible to play, because all those little blue flecks around the wave, those are pieces of glitter that are glued to the front of the Game Boy. And the whole screen has got a bordering of like shiny white glitter around it as well. So it's not for playing. I was surprised it even turned on.
you could never sell it on eBay or anything because somebody wouldn't know it was from Kelly Slater. They'd think it was from some 2-year-old.
Yeah, my kid could paint that.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, and then on the back you'll see the camera work is horrendous. I apologize for that. On the back, it looks like he's scribbled all over it with markers. Just like I think he got his kids to do it because it's such a shit fucking hack job, especially the back of the Game Boy. Like,
is it even autographed?
Yeah. There's a little black square in the bottom right corner of the back. It's a piece of black tape, and he signed it, I think, in like silver Sharpie.
When you would play it, would the marker just come off all over your hands?
I never played it.
Okay.
Because it's practically unplayable. But on the back, it's also got this... So it's scribbled over with markers, and then he's put like two like red glittery giant stars on the back of it, and then there's a blue box where the serial number information is. It's the sticker's ripped off, and it's colored in blue, and it says in white, it says, you, like the letter U, you can't play me like that.
Brilliant.
I love this.
Yeah. So if anyone here is listening to the enhanced version of the podcast, the AAC version of it, the chapter mark for this bit will have a picture of my stupid face holding this Game Boy and also a link to the article so you can see the other two pictures.
Yeah.
Nice.
You should throw the link in the show notes too.
I'll put a link in the show notes as well for you troglodytes listening to the MP3.
You caveman. Good stuff.
Well, very good stuff. So that's the price drop in the eShop, and now we're going to talk about the Nintendo 64, what it meant to us, what our favorite games were. Did anyone else play Dark Rift? So I think, Mike, do you want to start? You have information in front of you, don't you?
Well, I mean, I was just going to go over the basics, like N64 released in America September 29, 1996. I didn't get mine until Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I didn't get mine until later, too.
My birthday is December 1st, so when I was a kid, it was pretty easy to get a game console for my birthday based on the timing of it. Because then I could just be, well, you don't have to get me a Christmas present. And then they were like, all right. Like, my Christmas present will be like a game. And then they were covered.
I seem to recall getting mine with a bundle with Donkey Kong 64.
I got mine with no bundle. I got mine with a copy of Super Mario 64, and then when it came out, Shadows of the Empire.
Yeah, actually, yeah, same with me.
And my bundle came with a watermelon green see-through controller.
But not a watermelon green see-through system?
No, it was a black system.
Did it have, it came with two controllers?
I still have it. No, it just came with one.
They must have had extra controllers lying around. Weird. Man, that was that thing. Like, that was like a mid to late 90s thing where shit was just fucking translucently colored.
Yeah, it was. They had a translucent Game Boy color.
Yeah, thanks, Apple. Fuck, iMac's ruined. The iMac is much of a bastion of brilliant design now, but back in the 90s, it sparked one of the worst possible design trends ever.
Yeah, no, this is very true.
You can see all the insides.
And it's in neon color.
I got mine that Christmas after launch, and my grandma had gotten it for me, but was trying to hide it. And she had it in this huge safe that she had, and I was with her one time, and she went into that safe to get, I don't know, some cash. She was going to take us out for lunch or something, me and my little brother. And I saw it sitting in there, and I was like, holy shit. And I knew it had to be for me. Like, no one else, all my cousins were either really young or a lot older than me, so they weren't going to play it, and they were mostly girls. No offense to any girl listeners. And but she told me that it was for my my older cousin Jenny, and I was like, oh, that fucking sucks. And I believed her because I was just a dumb God. I don't know, 19, I guess 10 or 11. And then yeah, and then that Christmas I got it, and she didn't get me any games, which I thought was weird. And then when I got home, my mom gave me like Mario 64 and Shadows of the Empire. And I was stoked.
And you called your cousin Jenny and was like, eat
fuck
it, Jenny.
Now, Jenny.
Did you guys subscribe to Nintendo Power back then?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yep.
Scott?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I...
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did.
Scott. Okay. Did they send you those promotional VHS tapes like they sent to me?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
I still have them.
Do you remember the one they sent for the N64?
No, vaguely. The only one I really remember...
Scott.
Had a bunch of test footage in it, didn't it?
The only one,
go ahead, Scott.
The only one I really remember is the Star Fox 64 one, which was awesome.
Oh, with the Rumble Pack?
Yeah,
it was good. But the end, I remember this one, the Project Reality one. It just showed the one demo of the Snowspeeder wrapping the legs of the AT-AT, and you had to be like, no one will ever make a video game better than this.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Just on that one image of 3D Snowspeeder cabling the AT-AT's legs and then it toppling over, you'd be like, it basically is Star Wars. I don't need to watch the movie. It looks that good. Through my twisted kid eyes.
Yeah,
exactly. There's always that feeling. Every time a new system came out back then, you were like, nothing's ever going to look better.
Like when the fucking like Super Nintendo came out, we were like, graphics will never get more photorealistic than this, guys.
Exactly. Oh, man, when that Super Nintendo... came out and you just watched, you know, they had the demo, the demos in the stores that would just show the track sequence for Mario World. Like, dude, when he ducked under the giant bullet bill, I craved my pants. That was so amazing.
Yeah, I can remember being at a Sears and like, and I not having an SNES yet and like seeing that running and then playing it and just thinking, my God, this is incredible.
They'll never do it in 3D.
No, it's impossible. This is it. This is the top.
The early screenshots of Mario 64 and Nintendo Power. How psyched were you?
Yeah, pretty fucking psyched. I don't think it really sunk in until I played the game. You know, like I saw the screenshots. Yeah. I was like, oh, it looks great. But it wasn't until you really controlled Mario that you're like, this really works.
This is something new.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And the giant chain chomp and, you know, stuff like that.
I was still more looking forward to Shadows of the Empire, because at the time, what year was that, 96? I was in middle school, and I was at the height of my Star Wars fandom, pretty much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too.
I was playing the customizable card game. Like, I was into Star Wars more than I probably... I mean, I still fucking love Star Wars, but the prequels took a lot of wind out of my sails.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But back then, I mean, I read Shadows of the Empire. Like, Shadows of the Empire was a big deal. It was like, they were going to do everything for Shadows of the Empire except make a movie.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah. I had the comic. The comic's really good.
Yeah, it had a book, it had a comic, it had a video game, it had everything.
I think it had action figures.
Oh, yeah, it did. It did, yeah.
I think it even had an expansion in the customizable card game.
Wow.
It was,
and Shadows,
it was
Shadows
everywhere.
Wasn't just some, you know, knockoff game. It was really good.
Yeah, it's got its weak points, but
yeah,
the opening level is epic.
It really is. I feel like the vehicle levels still hold up really well today. I mean, the on-foot stuff was very floaty and you know, the jumping especially kind of sucked. But the vehicle levels, I still think, are great.
And IG-88 was a pain in the ass, too.
I was about
that.
to say,
it was.
Wait, did Factor 5 make that game?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
Here, hold on. I've got... Well, keep going. I had a list open, although it closed now, but I had a list open of all the N64 games. Here we go. Does it say that?
Can either of you guess what early N64 game I was most excited about?
Oh, it just says LucasArts developed it.
Oh, okay. Pilot Wings.
No, God, no.
Quest 64.
I was going to say Quest 64.
Blast Corps?
No, Turok.
Oh, yeah.
Turok.
I had a lot of fun with Turok.
Dude, that game
was
awesome.
Turok was like a big deal because it was like, ooh, Nintendo's getting a mature game.
Yep.
And dual stick, sort of, kind of.
Oh, yeah. Then they had to use the C buttons to kind of turn, didn't it?
It worked for what it was.
Well, did you guys, speaking of dual sticks, did you guys ever play GoldenEye with twin stick mode
I don't think I did, no.
No.
There was a mode in GoldenEye where one of the control schemes I think they're called like 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, but then there's a control scheme called 2.1, which uses two controllers.
What?
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
It's dual analog, but you need two controllers to do it.
So, wait, how does that work? Because that would mean one player controls two...
No. You can only play with up to two players maximum that way.
Yeah.
Like player one would use ports one and two, and player two would use ports three and four.
That sounds really awkward.
And then you wouldn't use the, you couldn't use the, like, R button to, like, aim or anything. You just had to use the other stick to do all the
aiming. Yeah, it didn't work very well.
No.
But it was in there. And another game that did that was Robotron 64, because it was a twin-stick shooter.
I remember that game.
In the arcade. And that one I played, I rented that, and I played the crap out of it with twin sticks. And it's great if you've got two controllers to play it with, because then the twin-stick gameplay is perfectly replicated.
Huh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was kind of neat. They really tried some weird stuff. about Mario 64 real quick. I know there's plenty to talk about, and I don't want to spend too much time on that one specifically. But I remember it being the first game that I could really just have on and just kind of fuck around. You know, like even the old Mario games, you've got time limits. And most SNES games, you couldn't just run, you know, walk around and do whatever you want. But N64, you could. You could just walk around the castle. You could fly around outside the castle, like once you... I think you had to get all the stars. I mean, you could get up on the roof and talk to Yoshi and whatever else. But and then I just remember it was the first game I ever just, like, even kind of tried to break it. You know, I'd spin the camera so I could see through walls, or I'd get it right up as it was inside Mario and just really, like, just mess around with it. And it was
fun. There's a way to get up to the roof without having
a whole bunch
stars.
Of complicated wall kicking.
If you are crazy good at wall kick, I spent, like, 3 solid hours one day doing it.
Did you do it?
I got it. I mean, it took me like 3 hours to do it. And I could see it and I could understand what I had to do. It's just that the angles are so tight that if you're off by even a little bit, you fly off the side of the castle. You have to keep yourself perfectly aligned between these two walls. And it's really difficult, but you could pull it off. And when you do, you feel like fucking God King.
Jesus. And was Yoshi up there and he still said the same spiel, like that you got everything? And
yeah, but he doesn't give you the cap or something. Like, he's up there, but you can't interact with him or something.
Oh, okay.
I forget. Some trigger in the code that makes him not fully functional. Huh.
Oh.
Until you get all 100 stars.
That's interesting.
Or 100, 150, yeah.
I 150 that game so many times. Man, I love Mario 64. That is I think I've said it before. That's my favorite 3D Mario game.
Yeah, it's up there. It was great. I'd have a hard time putting it against Galaxy 2. They might be kind of neck and neck for me. But like I said, just playing Mario 64 and just exploring it and just fucking with it was just so much fun.
And there's just something about, you know, the game opens up and you're just in the castle garden. And it's just like, Go on, do stuff, and you're like, oh shit.
That's true. Right. Yeah, there's not much like exposition. Even the new like Mario Galaxy games have at least a little bit sort of like introduction levels. But back then, yeah, they just you got a letter, come get some cake, and then you go to the castle and kind of see what's going on.
Shit has gone down.
Yeah, and then that's it. Yeah, you just go.
Yeah,
chase a little bunny rabbit around the sewer.
Yeah,
I hated that.
Yeah, gotta catch him twice.
Yeah, I hated that.
Yeah, he was awful. I can't believe, Mike, that you spent 3 hours trying to get to the roof, but you never got all the stars. Were there just some you couldn't, or you just weren't interested?
I just burned out on it at one point, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm done with this game." Something else came out.
I think there are a few levels.
I never
where
got
it's easy to burn out.
I didn't get all the shines in Mario Sunshine. I didn't get all the stars in fucking Galaxy. I never do. Huh. I never do.
Yeah, that's
I beat the game and I have the intent of finishing it, and I do a couple levels, and then eventually, like, another game comes out and it just falls by the wayside because, well, I already beat it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's fair. So, Zach, you got your N64 rather late, a few years after launch.
Yeah, rather late, yeah.
You still went back and played all these launch games? I mean, or had you played them at friends' houses or something?
I'd played most of them at friends' houses, but I actually went back and bought a lot of older games recently. I mean, I've been on that kick pretty recently where... You know, I'll look in the comic shop, I'll see, oh, look, they have Star Fox 64. I'll buy that for $10, you know, that kind of thing. You know, Yoshi's Story and stuff like that. I sold Donkey Kong. So happy I did.
Good idea. Game is a turd.
Awful game.
It kind of was. My favorite part, though, was just finding the arcade machine and playing the original Donkey Kong.
Yeah, that's all it was good
for.
That
should tell you something about how bad the rest of it was.
Yeah. I kind of have fond memories of Donkey Kong 64, if only because it was the first Christmas, my mom, like, really tried to go out on her own and, like, buy me video game stuff, like, without, like, my older cousin helping who kind of knew things about video games. And she knew I wanted it, and she got it for me. But then she also got me, like, the generic player's guide instead of the Nintendo one, which doesn't even matter. But as a kid, like, of course I noticed
the Primal one.
Exactly. And then she got me...
Well, it was, like, $5 cheaper.
Exactly. And so, I don't blame her. But as a kid, like, of course I noticed. I never said anything. But, and then she also got me a third-party controller with, like, a built-in rumble pack, and it was, like, yellow. Like, I guess they had some promotion that you'd get it with Donkey Kong or something. I don't know, but it was the same thing where the buttons stuck, and it never felt quite as good, but of course I didn't say anything, and I just appreciated it.
I remember those old Prima games where they always had errors in them.
The guides? Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how, like, I mean, I guess Nintendo gives them the games to make the guides, obviously, but it seems like, yeah, the guy who does it, like, he's got probably a tenth the amount of time the guy from Nintendo Power had to write the same guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he doesn't have direct access to the guys who made the game, so.
Oh, yeah, they have the short end of the stick there.
And have either of you even heard of Dark Rift?
No, you kept talking about that. Well, keep talking about
it. I know. It was an early fighter. Early fighting game on the N64 that had these huge hulking monsters of characters, and not like Rampage or anything, but they were just these, you know, big ogres and you know, dudes with lots of armor, and it actually played like shit. But one of my earliest N64 memories was playing that with a buddy, and it was an awful game, but it was really fun to play with him.
Yeah, I'm looking at the box art now, and, you know, I might have actually possibly rented this one time.
Hell yeah.
It looks kind of familiar.
I remember when you could just go to the store and rent games. I did that a lot.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I played most of my games.
Yeah, Blockbuster.
Now we have Gamefly, but I don't have Gamefly.
Yeah,
I don't either.
Yeah.
Kind of expensive for what it is.
Yeah, I don't play enough games for it to really... Like, if I was playing games constantly, which I kind of wish I was, then I would have a use for it.
Yeah.
I also like to own games, like
me too.
It kills me if I have to resell things, you know, like either at GameStop or even just like on eBay or stuff like that. Like I hate to do it, but of course things come up and I've got to.
Well, when I was a kid, I had I had just gotten a Super Nintendo, and my mom was like, "Well, you don't need this Nintendo anymore. You have a Super Nintendo," and I was like, "Yeah, I guess." And then like a week later, we had a garage sale, and she sold it out from under me. Along with all of my games, I had like 50 something NES games. Like, ooh. I had a good collection for a kid. I was spoiled, so I had a good collection of NES games, and all of them gone. Along with, I didn't. Who cares if you sell the system? I can get another system.
But the games,
all those games, and I'm sure 90% of them were crap. I don't even remember what they all were, but man, they were good.
I'm probably
remembering it wrong too. I bet I probably had like 12, and it looked like 50 to me.
It was a sad day when my Nintendo stopped working. It was so sad. My Super Nintendo still works.
I won't sell a game now. Like I would get rid of some stuff that I'd gotten for review, like stuff that I didn't like.
Yeah.
But if it's a game I bought, like I'm keeping it forever, if possible.
Yeah. Actually,
if I want to play it?
I have a DS carrying case, and I just opened it the other day to actually finally put my 3DS in there, and I all these games fell out that I didn't even know I still had. just all kinds of crazy things.
Happens especially with Game Boy and like handheld games.
Yeah,
because you just lose them.
Oh, yeah, I've lost a lot of old Game Boy games that I wish I still had.
I'm gonna jump around here in the N64's life, but I loved StarCraft as a kid. I played it on my like Windows 95 PC.
That's right. That came out on the
64. You did not have StarCraft 64.
Well, you know, like I read Nintendo Power pretty much exclusively for my video game news, and it was always like supposed to come out this year, and so I always told my mom I wanted it, but of course it would always get pushed back. It would never come out, and I would like call GameStop, and they would pretty much just make up a date that it was going to come out, and it never did. So my mom was nice enough to again her trying to. I don't know, help me with my video game needs. She like went on the computer and she just made a little like gift certificate basically just by herself, and it said like good for one copy of StarCraft 64, like whenever it comes out. And I didn't wait for it. I ended up just using that to redeem something else at some point. And then eventually I rented it when it came out, and I was just like, Jesus Christ, I'm so glad I didn't buy this. Like, I was just so mad that I waited. I don't know why I thought that it would translate well at all. I mean, I loved it on the PC. I had no problem playing it on my computer, but for some reason, I just had to have it on the N64.
I remember it looked like
it's the best game ever on the best system ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it did look pretty bad. I even tried, me and my cousin, we even tried to play like split screen multiplayer at one point.
Oh,
that just killed it. Yeah, that was.
And isn't that the reason the game was delayed so much?
Was for that, yeah, because they even put in like a little like exclusive campaign, I guess.
Yeah.
That might even.
Which is probably why you wanted it.
Yeah, which might even tie into the canon. Like, they might still consider it, you know, canonical, but it was bad. It was really bad.
Yeah, I do remember they had exclusive content, now that you mentioned that.
I read
about it in Nintendo Power. I never played it.
Yeah, it was rough. I mean, it didn't control terribly. They did an admirable job, but you couldn't control as many units at a time, and the unit count, I think, was lower. You couldn't even make as many units as you could in the PC version.
Which is the whole point of, like, great, now you can't play Zerg.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're great. You can build, like, 50 Zerglings and that's it. Well, that's not really going to do me much good. So, yeah, that one was rough. Just one other note about my mom buying me things for Christmas. It was great because that was when GameStop was really big on pushing, like, the cartridge cleaner kits. And I feel like every birthday and holiday, I'd get a game and then, like, a cartridge cleaner kit because they tricked my mom into thinking my games were all going to break if I wasn't, like, cleaning them with, like, a swab and rubbing alcohol.
Every day.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what we were speaking about earlier, speaking about those promotional videos? One of you had mentioned the one for Star Fox 64.
Yes,
so
yes.
Good.
Where they it's like a fake guys from Sony come by.
Sony and Sega.
And Sega, and they're like, it's like a guy dressed in like a blue hat and like a guy dressed in, I don't know what color Sony was.
Gray.
Nintendo was the gray. I don't know. Nintendo was red, at least in America.
Yeah.
So they come by and they steal, what do they steal? They steal, they kidnap somebody, right?
Yeah, they kidnap like the lead like programmer who was just like a mad scientist.
Yeah, that's right.
They
kidnap
like
the lead programmer, and they're like, "You got to give us the secret of Star Fox 64 and how awesome it is, so we can beat you."
Yep.
And he's like, and then he goes on to explain to the two guys what makes Star Fox 64
right.
So awesome. And then they get to the end, and he's like, "And then we've got the Rumble Pack."
Yeah, and that just like blew their faces off.
And the two guys like playing the reps from Sony and Sega like are just like, "What are we gonna do? We're fucking dead. What the fuck are we going to do? What are we going to do? My family, what are we going to do?" Like,
it's kind of funny that...
I like the Rumble Pack.
Me too, and it's funny how it ended up becoming a staple.
You can't not... Every controller has to rumble now.
I mean, that was... there were so many complaints with the original PS3 controller that they just got rid of it and started and added it.
They were like,
this
is a stupid feature. This is an old feature. Gamers don't care about it anymore. And people were like, no, we fucking like it.
Right. Not to mention...
To be fair, I like it just because it adds more heft to the controller.
Well, I was going to say, without it, the PS3 controller weighed about like 2 ounces, and you just felt like
way too light. I felt like I was going to throw it across the room every time I picked it up.
Exactly.
Like, just whoop!
Yeah, you'd go to lift it up off the table and just launch it into the air.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's no more, like, if it's heavier, it's probably just going to take more shock damage, but...
And
with more heft in your hand, it feels better.
N64, the first system where they started going nuts with the accessories. You got the Rumble Pack, but you also had those stupid memory packs.
I had a couple of memory packs.
You had to. That was stupid.
Well, there were some games, where you had to have them to save.
Yeah, some games didn't fucking code so you could save to the cartridge because they were too cheap to, like, what, put a fucking battery in it?
Like,
come on.
Mario
like
Kart,
especially...
you couldn't save ghosts.
Yeah, that's right.
Well,
that
was something like you couldn't save ghosts, but you could at least save your progress.
Yeah, that's true. And Madden...
It's just that there was not enough space memory-wise
required. Madden and Blitz both required memory packs.
Yeah.
They probably had to load the playbook onto it or something.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, that was the
worst. Or no, there were just so many stats, I guess, to keep track
of. Yeah, like your season data and everything like that.
Yeah.
And do you remember,
I think Wave Race 64 required it.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Period.
And then...
For ghosts, probably.
Yeah, and then third parties ended up making Rumble Packs with, like, the controller pack built in.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, it was just crazy stuff.
I'm surprised Nintendo never made one of those. It seems like an obvious thing.
They should have made, like, an Ultra controller that had the Rumble Pack attached and a memory pack built in.
You mean the Wii Remote? It has both of those.
Pretty much.
Right.
What was it? And then the expansion pack, of course.
The expansion pack.
Man. How many games used the expansion pack?
Like 5.
Can you pull up a list? But there were some important ones in there, like Perfect Dark and Majora's Mask.
And Turok 2. And Donkey Kong.
Yeah, it came with Donkey Kong. It came with Donkey Kong, didn't it?
Yeah.
You could, so. Yeah, let me look this up. What was it? Just expansion pack?
I think it came with Turok 2, too.
It was 4 megabytes of memory. That's all it was. Yeah. But I think it was 4. It might have been 8.
I remember that if you had the expansion pack plugged in for Turok 2, you could do a widescreen mode.
Oh, nice.
Ooh.
Yeah, I found a list of games that supported it, and then there were games that you had to have it. So Majora's Mask, you had to have it, and Donkey Kong 64, you had to have it.
That's it?
Yeah, Perfect Dark, I remember if you didn't have it, you couldn't play multiplayer. You had to have it for multiplayer.
That's right.
But yeah, all these other games, and even, StarCraft 64 used it to play, what's it say? The expansion pack was required for the Brood War missions. So apparently the game ran the normal StarCraft campaign just fine, but the expansion...
just couldn't run Brood War,
The Brood War expansion pack needed the N64 expansion pack. I don't know why.
Let's not forget the Pokemon port thing.
Which one?
The Pikachu N64? Oh, no, the Hey You Pikachu.
Too, but I was thinking about the Game Pack, where you could plug for Pokemon Stadium.
Yeah, that was awesome.
It was. I used the hell
That's
out of
clever.
That.
That's clever.
Yeah, that was great. And it was like basically like a Super Game Boy. It just let you even play the Game Boy game
right.
just on your TV, which was great.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, Pokemon Stadium rules. Not so much anymore.
Did you guys ever, I'm sure everyone's played Pokemon Snap, but did you guys ever actually take your cartridge to Blockbuster?
I did once, yes.
Printed them out, baby.
Because I always loved Charmander and all his iterations, and I remember having like Charizard stickers just all over my room as a kid, just like on everything.
I think they had a deal, a coupon. Well, I think you got a coupon where you got like your first set for free or something.
Yeah.
And you got a little sticker book.
Yep.
Yeah, so I got my first one for free, and then I never did it again, but it was cool.
Yeah,
That was really cool. I mean, yeah, it felt so advanced at the time, you know? I mean,
one of the best N64 games.
It's surprisingly good, considering the stupid premise.
Did you guys ever play the Virtual Console re-release of it?
Yeah, Carl and I bought it for each other on Christmas one year.
That's awesome.
We gifted it to each other.
Well, because they added in like actual Wii functionality where you can take pictures and then send them to people on your Wii friend list.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, which is great. It's like the only time I can think of them actually adding something into it.
Does it control as well? Because it controls nice on the N64.
Fine, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, that would be a great game for the 3DS with the gyro sensor. You
oh,
just
man.
Turn around to move the camera.
It would look good in 3D, too, being in first person.
Oh, it would look. That game, someone needs to make Pokemon Snap 3D. Get on it.
Yeah.
And how would
Fuck
that,
the
how
ambassador
would that,
program.
Yeah, exactly. How would that not sell, like, millions of copies, too? You know, like that.
I
would
rather have that than Star Fox 64 3D.
Ooh, he said it. Zach said it. We're all thinking it.
Speaking of, I guess that's not really N64, like Star Fox 64 3D, but we should talk about Star Fox 64.
Yeah. Why is there no save? Why can't I save my game?
So you were forced to play it and love it again.
I guess that was just designed that way, yeah, just to play through it a bunch and go all the different ways and get all the different endings and stuff.
You know what I thought was really funny is at the beginning of the game, you know, there's that guy that just says, good luck.
Yeah.
Like that guy, that's... Like, that guy was, like, the chief editor of Nintendo Power at the time.
Oh, really? Nice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He was somebody, like, decently high up at Nintendo Power.
That's right. It is only the first mission, right? He doesn't say it any other time.
It's as you're launching, yeah.
I miss the animal sounds from the Super Nintendo.
Driven. I have one friend in college who could do all four of them perfectly. Or all three of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Falco one was always the best of Jubber.
Well, and then you got Slippy, and I think that's the point where everyone started hating Slippy. It was just when he actually had a voice.
It's because Slippy doesn't know how to use an R-Wing.
Yeah, I don't know why he's up there. Fox, get this guy off of me.
Again.
So that's too... I remember they always gave you shit if you didn't get them all, or if you took too long, you know? Like, especially Falco, but all of them would be kind of like disappointed
in you. Well, yeah, but their ships...
You.
Their ships took damage, man.
Yeah, you had to, yeah.
If you let them die.
You know, depending on who was alive, or, well, not alive, but who was flying with you at the time, you know?
Yeah.
I always thought...
Yeah, they would be out of commission for the whole next mission if you let their ship go down, so that was... And you need them on some of the higher levels.
Oh, yeah.
But that N60... Oh, go ahead.
I was just saying, especially to get, you know, the different levels and stuff. Some levels you couldn't even get to without them in the party, you know, the level before.
Isn't it really hard to get to that underwater level?
No, the underwater level is really easy. I think, on the easy path.
Yeah, I think they make you go to it because they wanted to show off the sweet submarine, which wasn't sweet at all.
I hated the train level. I still do.
That's the best. The train level is one of my favorite levels in any game ever. Ask Johnny Metz.
It is so hard to beat the boss.
Ask Johnny Metz. He will tell you it is his favorite level in any game of all time.
Oh, my God.
It's super hard, but it's kind of epic. You know?
Why do you fight the boss? I just hit the switches and let him
miss that last switch.
Oh.
Always miss it.
I've played it. That's my favorite level, so I've played it so many times where I know the switch is like clockwork. I gotcha. Never miss them.
My favorite level in there.
I can't believe you don't like it. It's so good.
It was really good. My favorite level in there was the Independence Day like influenced one where it's like flying over that huge mothership over the pyramid. And you got to like fly under it and shoot the
Independence Day ripoff
reactor, I guess, or whatever it is. The big giant laser.
I love that first level. I mean,
the first level is good. What's your least favorite level in Star Fox 64? Because mine is the lava planet.
Oh yeah, that one sucks. You're just constantly damaged, right? Especially if you fly lower, right?
Yeah, but you get pickups every 2 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but there's some lava waves that I to this day I still always get hit by.
And the boss is pretty cool in that level.
The boss is cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like the train level.
I think there may be one or two levels on hard that I never even played.
I'm gonna say I don't like any of the flying through space levels just because the pop up is so bad.
Even the asteroid belt?
Yeah.
I love the asteroid belt because it's your gateway to talk to the space whale. Which makes no sense. And the ghost of Fox's dad or something is there too, right?
Yeah.
Or his dad is the space whale?
It's a windfish.
Yeah, that game was wild, especially as you did play it more and went down the different paths and like different endings opened up and you did start to see, you know, Fox's dad and...
Yeah. And the hard path is hard on that game.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever done the whole hard path.
I think I've gone through it, but I've never beaten the game on hard. I've only at the most beaten it on medium.
Oh, really?
I usually beat it on easy.
Now, okay, I am gonna go ahead and say what we're all thinking. Super Nintendo Star Fox is the better game.
I don't know about that. I never beat Super Nintendo Star Fox.
Yeah, I played the hell out of the Super Nintendo Star Fox, but no, and the N64 one is much, much better. It runs at more than 10 frames per second, so it already gets a head start.
It has a slightly better frame rate, I'll give you that.
Yeah. But, that game was great. And all these N64 games came at the perfect time where I was, like, a middle schooler. So once I was out of school... And all summer long, I could just play these games nonstop. So, like, you said you never beat Star Fox on hard, but it's like, I beat it on hard probably multiple times just because I had fun with it. And there weren't many games a lot of times. So I just played the great ones over and over again.
Yeah. Now, this will be interesting to hear from Zach since you got a system late, but I got mine, like, practically at launch. Like, I had it that year.
Mm-hmm.
And... that was 96. And by the time, like, 99 rolled around, I was, for the most part, not really playing my N64 anymore. And
I imagine so.
I credit that with my initial, like, up until that point, like 1999, I would never get anything that wasn't a Nintendo product.
Yeah.
Like, I was hardcore, dead in the wool, Nintendo fanboy number one. And then I got to the point where I was just like, well, there's no other games, like, to really play. So I got really into PC gaming.
Oh.
Because I had a PC, and to me, if I had a PC, I wasn't betraying Nintendo.
Yeah, because
it's different. It's
whole
PC.
Other
it's not the same market. Yeah, the same games are not available. It's a totally different mechanism, and I could build my own machine, which I did. And then sometime around like a year later, in 2000, I got a Dreamcast, and that is when I became a multi-platform console
Dreamcast.
Gamer. Yeah. And the Dreamcast if there was a non-Nintendo system to pop my cherry on, that was probably the best one.
Yeah, it was very ahead of its time. I think, but at least late in the N64 generation or the following generation, you had to have become a multi-console gamer. You know,
there was nothing coming out.
Yeah, exactly. I think the moment I realized that the N64 was in trouble and that there was just more stuff out there was I went to my cousin's one time and he had some friends over and they were doing something, but I went upstairs and started playing his PlayStation and he had a demo disc, which first of all blew me away that you could get a disc for free with demos for like 10 games on it.
And you would play them all a ton of times.
Oh yeah, definitely. But I booted up the Final Fantasy VII demo and I was just like, holy shit. Like, you gotta be kidding me that this is happening right now. And even, I never,
Games will never look this good again.
Yeah, there's video, you guys.
And lots of it.
Yeah, plenty of it. And yeah, I never got the original PlayStation.
Me neither.
But there were definitely moments when I wanted it. And actually, when I played Final Fantasy VII for the first time, I had bought the PC version.
Me too.
Because same as you, Mike. Like I had an N64, and then I got really big into PC gaming. Half-Life and
I played a lot of Tribes. And
Tribes.
Starcraft.
There you go. I played a lot of Command and Conquer. And
I played a lot of Unreal Tournament, baby.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
I played
too.
A good amount of that. Tribes was our go-to though.
Yeah.
Yeah, before the GameCube, I didn't even acknowledge the existence of other systems.
Yeah.
Like, I would...
Yeah, I was pretty much assuming, like, I knew literally nothing about the PlayStation.
Yeah, me neither.
At all. I was blind to how insanely popular it was and that everybody owned one. I was just like, this is just I don't know, it's just a thing. It's not going to last.
It's like a CD player.
Yeah, like, it was nothing to me. And then, like, by the time, like, the PlayStation... Like, by the time I realized that the N64 was done, I was like, oh, this PlayStation thing is taken off, but I didn't get one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then I ended up cracking and getting the Dreamcast because I was like, well, it's Sega. They're cool. They're old school.
Right.
So I'll get they're not Nintendo's enemy number one anymore, so I could support them. And that was then I cracked. And then after that, I got a PlayStation 2 and an Xbox, like in college. I bought them both in college.
Yeah.
And then after that, I mean, I took me a couple of years to get an Xbox 360, but my roommate got one before it even came out because he won one of those Mountain Dew contests they were doing
when the
Xbox came out. So we had an Xbox a month before it came out.
That's awesome.
Or an Xbox 360, rather, a month before it came out.
Did you play a lot of Perfect Dark Zero?
Yeah, unfortunately. And Condemned, though. Condemned was the game we would all sit around and watch.
Now, remember,
yeah,
it was backwards
shit.
Compatible at launch with Barbie Horse Adventures, so there's that.
Yeah, so we played that. And through college, we played, like, Halo and Halo 2. Like, that's all we played through all of college.
Yeah, I played a lot of that with my friends.
Like, network, in the dorms, we would just be like, we're on a network. Everyone's Xbox is on the network.
Right.
Nightly 16-player game of Halo.
That's awesome.
Like, every night for, like, a year in college. And then, like, I got a GameCube when it came out, so I lasted a long time
with the GameCube.
I did too,
yeah. Yeah, same.
And although it dried up pretty quick, and that's when I started going multi-platform.
For Smash Brothers.
Yeah,
I got
Smash
the GameCube.
Brothers.
I had the GameCube when it came out, and I bought the Xbox and the PlayStation 2 later on. Like, I got the PlayStation 2 for, like, $50 or something.
Ooh, nice.
I remember what I did. This is a good story.
Does it involve
Walmart,
pooping blood?
It involves slightly, but not really, scamming Walmart.
Don't feel bad about that.
I would – local Circuit City store had like 6 copies of Jet Grind Radio Future for Xbox.
Ooh.
And they had clearanced them down to $5, so I bought all of them. And I returned them to Walmart for $50 each.
Oh, my God.
And they only let you do that. They only let you make 3 non-receipted returns a year to avoid people abusing the policy like me. And not that I'm abusing it, because I'm giving them a $50 product that they're going to turn around and sell for $50. They're going to break even.
Yeah.
And they pay me in store credit, so it's not like I'm walking out the door with cash.
Right.
So I've got like $200-something of Walmart credit, and all of a sudden one weekend the PlayStation 2 goes on sale $50 off, and I'm like, I'm there.
Done.
And I got it for like $30 or something ridiculous. Wow. Like, I just paid the tax on it or something.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
And then I think I got an Xbox for Christmas or something, and that was great. But then... Sorry, I'm totally monopolizing this conversation.
My poor Dreamcast's internal battery died a long time ago, so I have to reset the time and the date every time I turn it on. So I've been thinking about just getting a new Dreamcast.
Yeah.
Although I assume it runs on a watch battery. I could probably just, get a new battery. I love my Dreamcast so much.
My friend Mike randomly had one. He got it from someone, and then he just gave it to me like a year ago. I'm missing either the power cable or the AV cable, so I haven't hooked it up yet. But I've got the controllers and a few games and all this stuff, and I'm just kind of waiting to finally buy the cable and hook it up. I never owned one, so I'm kind of excited. I played one at a friend's house a few times.
The good news about Dreamcast is that you can probably go online and get a torrent of every single game and just burn them to CDs.
Yeah.
Oh, seriously? Like that?
Yeah.
Was that easy then, huh?
They're imaged in such a way that the first line of code is an exploit that lets the game boot up.
Nice.
So, I mean, normally I wouldn't condone that kind of thing, obviously, but the Dreamcast is a dead system.
You're right. I don't know that I'm hurting anyone.
Any money being made on it is in the third-party resale market, and fuck those guys.
Yeah.
Exactly. Cool. Yeah, nice.
Yeah, so one day my friend just dropped off a binder. He had just had so many CDs, he burned 2 copies of every game, and he kept one of them. He gave him, a binder of, 50-something Dreamcast games sitting around, including really weird shit like Super Magnetic Neo and stuff like Seaman.
Oh, man.
Seaman.
Yeah. The Dreamcast version of Hey, Pikachu.
I never had a microphone, so I could never play Seaman. But
just look at his ugly face.
Hey, that's Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, we've gone on for a while here. I mean, I feel like we'll have to do another N64 episode next week because I just feel like there's so much we haven't touched on, and I know Andy and Neil are going to want to talk about it.
We haven't even talked about Zelda.
Right, yeah.
Thank God. We talked about that one enough.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they'll come on, and next week will just be all Zelda again.
The listeners are going to be... our listeners are going to be like, when are they going to talk about Zelda this week?
Well, let's do real quick before we sign off. I guess we'll definitely have to continue this. Maybe we continue it on the September 29th episode in honor of the N64 as well.
Oh, good idea.
Actually, this will be its 15th birthday, so...
Keep people waiting.
What we should do is, I think real quick, we should name our favorite N64 game that we played, our least favorite N64 game that we played, and the game that we think is the most underappreciated, or one like a diamond in the rough.
Okay. Oh, God, man.
I'm so glad we had time to prepare.
Yeah, right?
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Like, best ones are easy. I'm going to... Gonna have to really think about.
You go first, Mike. We'll think about it.
Yeah, I will try and go first.
You've clearly been thinking about this.
I have not. I just thought this concept up. I don't know about my favorite. It might be. It's probably either GoldenEye. How did we not talk about GoldenEye?
I know.
Or Perfect Dark, depending on. I guess we played a lot of them multiplayer overall. But Perfect Dark is the laptop gun, the suitcase gun, whatever it is.
Yeah, you can throw it on.
That thing is so great. I loved that thing. Except it also has that gun that x-rays through every wall and just wall hacks everybody.
Oh, yeah, that one was difficult.
We always turn that gun off. Actually, you know, though, it might be Smash Brothers. Man, there were a lot of good games for N64.
Yeah, I'm looking at the list now.
I'm not even looking at the list.
So many memories.
I will say the worst game that I probably ever played, it might have been Quest 64, which I know I rented once.
Yeah,
it might have been Donkey Kong Country or Donkey Kong 64.
Quest 64 I was so excited about. I was like, yes, an RPG finally coming to
the 64. And it had some really weird game mechanics in it. I remember it had something to do with circles where you could only attack people if you were within range of a certain circle distance of you.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I don't know. And then Diamond in the Rough game, it's really difficult to pick one. Like, there's not a lot of under-the-radar games on that system.
Oh, right? I got one.
Well, you got yours. I mean, I might just say... I don't know, I might just say Shadows of the Empire, even though it wasn't that under the radar, but I did really love it. Or it could be one of the Rogue Squadron games.
Oh, yeah.
That game has aged poorly.
You know what? No, I will give it to one of my favorite puzzle games ever, the new Tetris, with the one that Neil Voss did the soundtrack for.
Really, you like that game? Oh, crap.
Wait,
the new Tetris is so good. 4-player is just so good.
Tetrisphere, or...?
No, the new Tetris.
Oh, okay. Was it just... Okay.
It was called the new Tetris.
Remember there was one called Wetrix?
Yeah, Wetrix was another good, decent puzzle game. And then there was Tetrisphere.
Yeah.
Neil Voss also did the soundtrack for Tetrisphere.
I like Tetrisphere.
I think. Tetrisphere is good, but new Tetris is great. It's the one that introduced this thing where if you get a block of a 4x4 block of all of the same piece, it turns into a solid gold 8x8, or it turns into a solid gold 4x4 square. And if you clear the lines from that, you get extra points. And it was the first Tetris game that let you bank a piece and save it for later and return it to the playfield. And those couple improvements, especially being able to bank a piece, so good. It is. It's in the official Tetris rulebook that it's allowed. And have you guys look up on YouTube of professional Tetris players? Because there's versions of the game in Japan that run at feels 100 times speed.
Oh, nice.
And these guys are just playing it in some Zen mode, and they're just so insanely way too good at it.
That's crazy.
That's awesome.
So those will be my three games. It'll be I don't even remember what I said my favorite game was now.
Press rewind.
GoldenEye or Perfect Dark or Smash Brothers. I'll pick Smash Brothers in the end.
Okay.
And then my least favorite would maybe be Quest 64, and then the Diamond in the Rough would be New Tetris.
Okay. I'm ready to go.
Go ahead.
If that's all right with you, Zach.
Yeah.
Okay, well, best game, yeah, that's so tough. I mean, I guess I'd have to go with GoldenEye in terms of just how much I played it. I also loved Mario Kart a whole lot.
Oh, yeah.
So it's got to be close to those.
That was a great multiplayer system.
Oh, it was.
It was. I mean, even I remember all the systems that came out after that with just two controller ports. I just couldn't believe. Like, the PlayStation 2 only having two, I couldn't. It seems so weird to go
back
to two.
Yeah.
Well, the N64 was the first one with four.
I know, yeah, and that's why it seems so weird that the next generation, the PS2, only had two. Yeah. You know, it's just very odd.
The Xbox had four. They were smart.
The Xbox had four, yeah, and the GameCube
Dreamcast had four.
Yep, yeah. I don't know. I guess they were just trying to save money.
What the hell, Sony?
Now the PlayStation 3 overcompensating supports seven.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I want to get seven
people together.
Some random
number there, seven, yeah.
I think it's seven because I think it's supposed to be like six controllers and one Bluetooth remote controller.
Oh, I gotcha.
I want to get that many people together and play like a sports game and just have someone playing each role on the team.
That'd
like, I want
cool.
to have someone come over and play NHL 11 with me and control every skater and the goalie.
That would be cool, that actually. Would.
Yeah, and then I know you can do that, and then you can play online against other people, like, you know, doing the same thing. But okay, and then so worst game, I got to give it to StarCraft 64. That's easy for me. It was just so disappointing.
I did any of you play Superman 64?
I didn't.
The actual worst N64 game.
That's true.
It's one of the worst games ever made, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never played it, but I. Yeah.
It's infamous.
I guess if I had, maybe that would be on there. And then, I don't know, Diamond in the Rough. It's so hard because, like you said, the good games on N64 are pretty well known. Like, do I want to give it to like Diddy Kong Racing, which was fabulous. You know, and then I'm thinking of like all the wrestling games, particularly like WCW, NWO Revenge. I mean, I just remember playing that a ton.
You and Andy are going to get along just fine, Scott.
Oh, yeah? He's very fond of that game.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, see, that was great. Actually, recently, a friend of mine got an N64, and he got that game, and like four of us just sat down and played it for a couple hours. Very fun still. Huh. So, yeah, what the heck. I'll give it to Revenge, then. WCW NWO Revenge. It was a great, great wrestling game. Yeah, I'll go with that.
There we go. My favorite game is a toss-up between Mario Kart and Pokemon Snap.
So I feel like Pokemon Snap is a good diamond in the rough, actually.
Oh,
even
okay,
though it's fairly revered against, I guess, with Nintendo fans, but
yeah,
I would still call that
a
diamond in the rough.
Then I'll say most best game either Mario 64 or Mario Kart 64, because I played the fuck out of both of those games.
Yeah.
More so than Zelda. Like, once I beat Zelda, I didn't really go back to that. Until now, 13 years later. Worst game, there was a game called Road Rash 64.
I played that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It was awful.
It was.
For some reason, I owned that game. I think my brother might have stolen it from his friend's house or something. And we just ended up with it. And I think it just rotted everything around it. And Diamond in the Rough, I'd go with Pokemon Snap, but I'm actually going to go with Star Wars Episode 1 Pod Racing.
Oh, that's a good game.
So much fun.
Great
I
game.
Was also thinking, when you mentioned Road Rash, I thought of another a lot of people actually love is Beetle Adventure Racing.
Oh, I love that game. Oh my God, I love that game.
A game I rented and really liked, but I don't know if it's actually good or not, was Iggy's Wrecking Balls. Is that what it was
I've
called?
I've heard of
that.
Yeah,
I remember that game.
I liked that. I mean, I don't really
Was it kind of like a marbly
well.
Game?
Yeah. And then, you raced around on a track.
Oh, and then
stuff.
There was Rocket Robot on Wheels, which was created by Sucker Punch, the guys who went on to create Sly Cooper.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And Infamous.
But yeah, Pod Racing, I still look for that when I go to the comic shop, and if I ever found it, I'd grab it, because it's really good.
Did you ever play as anyone other than Anakin or Sebulba?
No.
I didn't.
No.
Yeah.
I think I actually liked that game so much that I think I probably maxed out every single character.
Nice.
Oh, wow. I could never beat it. I'd get to some point, like, in the circuit, and that I just couldn't ever win.
Yeah.
But I just probably wasn't very good.
Great game, though.
Yeah, definitely.
Another good, it's true, the N64 was a great multiplayer and a good racing game system. You mentioned Beetle Adventure Racing. I own that game. I don't know why I didn't think of it sooner, but, man, that's a good game. Although it's really hard. The single player is really hard. But it has a kind of a Jurassic Park-y level, so it's okay by me.
So it wins.
All right, well, does that wrap us up?
That's a good wrap.
I think so, guys. Yeah.
Cool.
Well, thanks for tuning
don't
in,
forget,
everybody.
Don't forget to send us your emails.
Newscast at NintendoReport.com.
There you go. Yeah, if you got any N64 memories or games we haven't talked about, send them our way.
Yeah, and follow us on Twitter. I'm at StrikerOB.
I'm at OKSoda.
I'm at ZMiller1902. Rate us on iTunes. Rate us well. If you're not going to rate us well, just don't rate us at all.
Yeah, you're doing no one a favor.
Exactly. So that wraps it up, gents. Thanks. Cool. Thanks for coming on.
Always glad to be here.
Yeah. You know, we have to have, I'm glad Mike came on the show and Scott too, because, or joined our crew, because Andy's never here anymore. He's busy having babies or something. And then, and then Neil's just never here anymore either. So,
yeah, thank God for us.
It's turned into a 3-man podcast, but all righty. Oh,
we made it through.
We did. Talk to you all next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.